20. Thorby found that Leda had ordered dinner in the garden. They were alone, and falling snow turned the artificial sky into an opalescent bowl. Candles, flowers, a string trio, and Leda herself made the scene delightful, but Thorby failed to enjoy it. Even though he liked Leda and considered the garden the best part of Rudbeck Hall, the meal was almost over when Leda said,
"A dollar for your thoughts."
Thorby looked guilty.
Nothing.
"It must be a worrisome nothing."
"Well, yes."
"Want to tell Leda?"
Thorby blinked. Weemsby's daughter was the last one he could talk to. His gloom was caused by wonder as to what he could do if he became convinced that Rudbeck was mixed up in slavery.
"I guess I'm not cut out to be a businessman."
"Why, Daddy says you have a surprising head for figures."
Thorby snorted. "Then why doesn't he..." He stopped.
"Why doesn't he what?"
Doggone it, a man had to talk to somebody. Somebody who sympathized, or bawled him out if necessary. Like Pop, like Fritz. Yeah, like Colonel Brisby. He was surrounded by people, yet utterly alone. Except that Leda seemed to want to be friendly. "Leda, how much of what I say to you do you tell your father?"
To his amazement, she blushed. "What made you say that, Thor?"
"Well, you are pretty close to him, aren't you?"
She stood up suddenly. "If you've finished, let's walk."
Thorby stood up. They strolled paths, watched the storm, listened to its soft noises against the dome. She guided them to a spot away from the house and shielded by bushes, and there sat down on a boulder.
"This is a good spot for a private conversation."
"It is?"
"When the garden was wired, I made sure that there was somewhere I could be kissed without Daddy's snoopers listening in."
Thorby stared.
"You mean that?
Surely you realize you are monitored almost everywhere but the ski slopes."
I didn't. And I don't like it."
"Who does? But it is a routine precaution with anything as big as Rudbeck. But you mustn't blame Daddy. I just spent some credits to make sure the garden wasn't as well wired as he thought. So, if you have anything to say you don't want Daddy to hear, you can talk now. He'll never know. That's a cross-my-heart promise."
Thorby hesitated, then checked the area.
He decided that if a microphone were hidden nearby, it must be disguised as a flower, which was possible.
"Maybe I ought to, save it for the ski slope."
"Relax, dear. If you trust me at all, trust me that this place is safe."
All right." He found himself blurting out his frustrations, his conclusion that Uncle Jack was intentionally thwarting him unless he would turn over his potential power. Leda listened gravely.
"That's it. Now am I crazy?"
She said, "Thor, you know that Daddy has been throwing me at you."
"Huh?"
"I don't see how you could miss it unless you are utterly... But then perhaps you are. Just take it as true. It's one of those obvious marriages that everyone is enthusiastic about, except maybe the two most concerned."
Thorby forgot his worries in the face of this amazing statement.
"You mean, that you..."
He trailed off.
"Heavens, dear, if I intended to go through with it, would I have told you anything? Oh, I admit I promised, before you arrived, to consider it, but you never warmed to the idea, and I'm too proud to be willing under those circumstances, even if the preservation of Rudbeck depended on it. Now what's this about Daddy not letting you see the proxies that Martha and Crichton gave him?"
"They won't let me see them. I won't sign until they do."
"But you'll sign if they do?"
Maybe I will, eventually, but I want to see what arrangements my parents made."
"I can't see why Daddy opposes such a reasonable request, unless..."
She frowned. "Unless what?"
"What about your shares? Have those been turned over to you?"
"What shares?"
"Why, yours! You know what shares I hold. They were given to me when I was born, by Rudbeck, your grandfather, I mean, and my uncle. You probably got twice as many, since you were expected to become the Rudbeck someday."
"I haven't any shares." She nodded grimly.
That's one reason Daddy and the judge don't want you to see those papers. Our personal shares don't depend on anyone. They're ours to do as we please with, since we are both legal age. Your parents voted yours, just as Daddy still votes mine, but any proxy they assigned concerning your shares can't be any good now. You could pound the desk and they'll have to cough up, or shoot you. She frowned. Not that they would shoot. Thor, Daddy is a good sort, most ways.
I never said he wasn't.
I don't love him, but I'm fond of him. But when it comes down to it, I'm a Rudbeck, and he's not. That's silly, isn't it? Because we Rudbecks aren't anything special. We're just shrewd peasants. But I've got a worry, too. You remember Joe Delacroix?
He's the one that wanted an interview with me?
That's right. Joey doesn't work here anymore.
Well, I don't understand.
He was a rising star in the engineering department of Galactic, didn't you know? The office says he left to accept other employment. Joey says he was fired for going over their heads to speak to you.
She frowned.
I don't know what to believe. Now I believe Joey. Well, Thor, are you going to take it lying down, or prove that you are Rudbeck of Rudbeck?
Thorby chewed his lip. I'd like to go back into the guard and forget the whole mess. I used to wonder what it was like to be rich. Now I am, and it turns out to be mostly headaches.
So you'd walk out on it?
Her voice was faintly scornful. I didn't say that. I'm going to stay and find out what goes on. Only I don't know how to start. You think I should pound Uncle Jack's desk and demand my shares?
Not without a lawyer at your side.
There are too many lawyers in this now.
That's why you need one. It will take a sharp one to win a scrap with Judge Bruder.
How do I find one?
Oh, goodness, I don't use lawyers. But I can find out. Now let's stroll and chat, in case anybody is interested.
Thorby spent a glum morning studying corporation law. Just past lunch, Lita called.
Thor, how about taking me skiing? The storm is over and the snow is just right.
She looked at him eagerly. Well,
oh, come on!
He went. They said nothing until they were far from the house. Then Lita said,
The man you need is James J. Garsh, New Washington.
I thought that must be why you called. Do you want to ski? I'd like to go back and call him.
Oh, my! She shook her head sadly. Thor, I may have to marry you just to mother you. You go back to the house and call a lawyer outside Rudbeck, one whose reputation is sky high. What happens?
What?
You might wake up in a quiet place with big muscular nurses around you. I've had a sleepless night, and I'm convinced they mean business. So I had to make up my mind. I was willing for Daddy to run things forever, but if he fights dirty, I'm on your side.
Thanks, Lita.
Thanks, he says. Thor, this is for Rudbeck. Not a business. You can't grab your hat and go to New Washington to retain a lawyer. If I know Judge Bruder, he has planned what to do if you try.
But you can go look at some of your estate, starting with your house in New Washington.
That's smart, Lita.
I'm so smart I dazzle myself. If you want to look good, you'll invite me along. Daddy has told me that I ought to show you around.
Why, sure, Lita, if it won't be too much trouble.
I'll simply force myself. We'll actually do some sightseeing, in the Department of North America, at least. The only thing that bothers me is how to get away from the guards.
Guards?
Nobody high up in Rubik ever travels without bodyguards. Why, you'd be run ragged by reporters and crackpots.
I think, Thorby said slowly, that you must be mistaken in my case. I went to see my grandparents. There weren't any guards.
They specialize in being unobtrusive. I'll bet there were always at least two in your grandmother's house while you were there. See that solitary skier? Long odds, he's not skiing for fun. So we have to find a way to get them off your neck while you look up Counselor Garsh. Don't worry, I'll think of something.
Thorby was immensely interested in the great capital, but still more interested in getting on with his purpose. Lita did not let him hurry.
First, we sightsee. We naturally would.
The house, simple compared with Rudbeck, 20 rooms, only 2 of them large, was as ready as if he had stepped out the day before. 2 of the servants he recognized as having been at Rudbeck. A ground car with driver and footman in Rudbeck livery was waiting. The driver seemed to know where to take them. They rode around in the semi-tropic winter sunshine, and Lita pointed out planetary embassies and consulates. When they passed the immense pile, which is headquarters of the Hegemonic Guard, Thorby had the driver slow down while he rubbernecked. Lita said, "That's your alma mater, isn't it?" Then she whispered, "Take a good look. The building opposite its main door is where you are going." They got out at the replica Lincoln Memorial, walking up the steps, and felt the same hushed awe that millions have felt when looking at that brooding giant figure. Thorby had a sudden feeling that the statue looked like Pop. Not that it did, but still, it did. His eyes filled with tears. Lita whispered, "This place always gets me. It's like a haunted church. You know who he was? He founded America. Ancient history is awesome." "He did something else."
"What?"
"He freed slaves."
"Oh."
She looked up with sober eyes.
"That means something special to you, doesn't it?"
"Very special." He considered telling Lita his strongest reason for pushing the fight, since they were alone and this was a place that wouldn't be bugged. But he couldn't. He felt that Pop would not mind, but he had promised Colonel Brisby. He puzzled over inscriptions on the walls, in letters and spelling used before English became System English. Lita tugged his sleeve and whispered,
"Come on. I can never stay here long or I start crying."
They tiptoed away. Lita decided that she just had to see the show at the Milky Way. So they got out, and she told the driver to pick them up in 3 hours and 10 minutes. Then Thorby paid outrageous scalper's prices for a double booth and immediate occupancy.
"There," she sighed as they started inside. "That's half of it. The footman will drop off as they round the corner, but we're rid of the driver for a while. There isn't a place to park around here, but the footman will be right behind us if he wants to keep his job. He's buying a ticket this minute, or maybe he's already inside. Don't look."
They started up the escalator.
"This gives us a few seconds. He won't get on until we curve out of sight. Now listen, the people holding these seats will leave as soon as we show the tickets. Only I'm going to hang on to one, pay him to stay. Let's hope it's a man, because our nursemaid is going to spot that booth in minutes. Seconds, if he was able to get our booth number down below. You keep going. When he finds our booth, he'll see me in it with a man. He won't see the man's face in the dark, but he'll be certain of me because of this outlandish night glow outfit I'm wearing. So he'll be happy. You zip out any exit but the main lobby. The driver will probably wait there. Try to be in the outer lobby a few minutes before the time I told them to have the car. If you don't make it, hire a flea cab and go home. I'll complain aloud that you didn't like the show and went home."
Thorby decided that the X-Corps had missed a bet in Lita.
"Won't they report that they lost track of me?"
"They'll be so relieved they'll never breathe it. Here we are. Keep moving. See you."
Thorby went out a side exit, got lost, got straightened out by a cop, at last found the building across from Guard SHQ. The building directory showed that Garsh had offices on the 34th Terrace. A few minutes later, he faced a receptionist whose mouth was permanently pursed in "No." She informed him, frostily, that the counselor never saw anyone except by appointment. Did he care to make an inquiry appointment with one of the counselor's associates?
"Name, please."
Thorby glanced around. The room was crowded. She slapped a switch.
"Speak up,"
she snapped.
"I've turned on the privacy curtain."
"Please tell Mr. Garsh that Rudbeck of Rudbeck would like to see him." Thorby thought that she was about to tell him not to tell fibs. Then she got up hastily and left. She came back and said quietly,
"The counselor can give you 5 minutes. This way, sir."
James J. Garsh's private office was in sharp contrast with building and suite. He himself looked like an unmade bed. He wore trousers, not tights, and his belly bulged over his belt. He had not shaved that day. His grizzled beard matched the fringe around his scalp. He did not stand up.
"Rudbeck?"
"Yes, sir. Mr. James J. Garsh?"
"The same. Identification?"
Seems to me I saw your face in the news, but I don't recollect.
Thorby handed over his ID folder. Garsh glanced at the public ID, studied the rare and more difficult to counterfeit ID of Rudbeck and Associates. He handed it back.
Sit down. What can I do for you?
I need advice. And help.
That's what I sell.
But Bruder has lawyers running out of his ears. What can I do for you?
Is this confidential?
Privileged, son. The word is privileged. You don't ask a lawyer that. He's either honest or he ain't. Me, I'm middling honest. You take your chances.
Well, it's a long story.
Then make it short. You talk, I listen.
You'll represent me?
You talk, I listen.
Garsh repeated.
Maybe I'll go sleep. I ain't feeling my best today. I never do.
All right. Thorby launched into it. Garsh listened with eyes closed, fingers laced over his bulge. That's all, concluded Thorby, except that I'm anxious to get straightened out so that I can go back into the guard. Garsh, for the first time, showed interest.
Rudbeck of Rudbeck? In the guard? Let's not be silly, son.
But I'm not really Rudbeck of Rudbeck. I'm an enlisted guardsman who got pitched into it by circumstances beyond my control.
I knew that part of your story. The Throb riders ate it up. But we all got circumstances we can't control. Point is, a man doesn't quit his job, not when it's his.
It's not mine, Thorby answered, stubbornly.
Let's not fiddle. First, we get your parents declared dead. Second, we demand their wills and proxies. If they make a fuss, we get a court order. And even the mighty Rudbeck folds up under a simple subpoena or be locked up for contempt.
He bit a fingernail.
Might be some time for the estate is settled and you are qualified. Court might appoint you to act, or the wills may say who, or the court might appoint somebody else.
But it won't be those two. If what you say is correct. Even one of Brutus' pocket judges wouldn't dare. He'd be too raw, and he'd know he'd be reversed.
But what can I do if they won't even start the action to have my parents declared dead?
Who told you you had to wait on them? You're the interested party. They might not even qualify as amicus curiae. If I recall the gossip, they're hired hands, qualified with one nominal share each. You're the number one interested party, so you start the action. Other relatives? First cousins, maybe?
No first cousins. I don't know what other heirs there may be. There's my grandparents, Bradley.
Didn't know they were alive. Will they fight you?
Thorby started to say no, changed his mind. I don't know.
Cross it when we come to it. Other heirs? Well, we won't know till we get a squint at the wheels, and that probably won't happen until a court forces them. Any objection to hypnotic evidence? Truth drugs? Lie detectors?
No, why?
Me all the bets witness that they are dead, not just long time missing.
But if a person is missing long enough?
Depends. Any time of years is just a guide to the court, not a rule of law. Time was when 7 years would do it, but that's no longer true. Things are roomier now.
How do we start?
Got any money? Or have they got you hog-tied on that? I come high. I usually charge for each exhale and inhale.
Well, I've got a megabuck and a few thousand more, about 8.
Haven't said I'd take this case. Has it occurred to you that your life may be in danger?
No, it hasn't.
Son, people do odd things for money, but they'll do still more drastic things for power over money. Anybody sitting close to a billion credits is in danger. It's like keeping a pet rattlesnake. If I were you and started feeling ill, I'd pick my own doctor. I'd be cautious about going through doors and standing close to open windows.
He thought,
Rudbeck is not a good place for you now. Don't tempt him. Matter of fact, you ought not to be here. Belong to the diplomatic club?
No, sir.
You do now. People will be surprised if you didn't. I'm often there around 6. Got a room there. Sort of private. 2011. I still haven't said I'd take it. Got any idea what I'd have to do if I lose this case?
Huh? No, sir.
What was that place you mentioned? Jubalpore? That's why I'd have to move.
Suddenly he grinned.
But I've been spalling for a fight. Rudbeck, huh? Bruder, you mentioned a megabuck?
Thorby got out his book of checking certificates, passed them over. Garsh rifled through it, shoved it into a drawer.
We won't convert this now. They're almost certainly noting your withdrawals. Anyhow, it's going to cost you more. Goodbye. See you in a couple of days.
Thorby left, feeling bucked up. He had never met a more mercenary, predatory old man. He reminded Thorby of the old, scarred freedmen professionals who swaggered around the new amphitheater. As he came outdoors, he saw guard headquarters. He looked again, then ducked through murderous traffic and ran up its steps.